The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Great day to all of our listeners who have tuned into our broadcast on this day. You are listening to an hour of empowerment with Charles Haywood Ellis III. We welcome your comments, discussions, questions, and feedback to enhance our talk show. For that purpose, you can reach out to Charles Ellis at www.charleshellisministries.org. You can also follow him on Facebook at facebook.com/Charles H. Ellis, or reach out to him on Twitter at Bishop CHE, the number 3. And now, here's your host, Charles Haywood Ellis III.
Thank you, Ms. Trevis, and I am excited about the topic that we have on today. I am your host, Charles Haywood Ellis III, and this is an hour of empowerment. I'm sitting here with my sidekicks, Trevis and Durrani. Durrani is on our social media, so those of you that, again, want to reach out to us about the conversation that we're going to be having on today, you can reach out to us at Bishop CHE 3, the number 3. That's our Twitter, again, at Bishop CHE, the number 3. Or if you want to hit us on Facebook, that address is facebook.com/Bishop Charles H. Ellis. And then you can reach out to us on our email address at charleshellisministries.org. I'm glad, again, that you have tuned in. I want you to call somebody, neighbor or friend, a coworker, and let them know that they can hear an hour of empowerment, again, with your host, yours truly, Charles Haywood Ellis III. They can go on voiceamerica.com and click on the Empowerment Channel, and it'll take them right to today's show. I want to move right into the show on today. We're going to be talking about the effects of mental health on our children. Is this the new neglected disease? We're so very happy to be joining in the conversation on today. Our very special guest, Dr. Carolyn King from Pine Rest Christian Mental Health Services, she's a child and adolescent psychiatrist. Dr. King is a psychiatrist at this facility. She works with children, adolescents, and also adults. Dr. King is also an active committee member with the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and she is the founder of Reach Out to Youth, a program which connects students ages 7 through 11 with careers in the medical arts and sciences. Welcome to our discussion on today, Dr. King.
Thank you. Thank you, Bishop Ellis.
Listen, I am glad that you were able to join with us on today. And in this first segment of the show, I want to move right into the topic, the effects of mental health on our children. Can you just help us out briefly with the effects of mental health and how you have seen it evolve over the years? Is it getting worse? Is it getting better? Are we addressing it, or can we do a much better job of addressing mental health?
That's an excellent question. Well, the first thing I like to say is how we identify these signs of mental illness in children and adults. It's very important for us to understand that the brain is just an organ of the body, and it gets sick just like any other organ of the body. And so when we consider what the brain controls, is the organ that controls emotion and behavior. Now, people have a choice about how to respond to their emotions with behavior unless their brain gets sick, and then they lose control of how to respond. That's when we start to see this irrational behavior start to appear.
Let me say something to you about mental health here in Michigan. We have seen a lot of the mental health clinics and facilities where people could be residents. We've seen those close down over the years, and it looks as if that budget has been slashed or cut substantially, at least over the last, let me say, maybe 15 or 20 years. And we see a lot of people now being self-medicated at home. And I'm not so sure whether that is a great idea or not. Could you chime in on that?
Yes, so you're absolutely right. What happened when the mental health care budgets were cut is that you saw people coming out of the state hospitals and into the community. And in theory, the money was to go to community mental health agencies to support this population. In reality, what you saw then is homelessness increase and the prison population increase with people who had these brain illnesses. When you think about the brain, again, as the organ that controls behavior, there are two places that can deal with people who have behavioral problems. One of them is the jails, and the other is psychiatric hospitals. Both of us can, quote, lock you up against your will for behavior problems or aberrant behavior. So you see this population that's gone into the prisons as a result of not having those health care funds.
Well, let me say that I've come to learn that one of the big drawbacks on self-medication is that most individuals are dealing with mental health. They don't want to accept the fact that they're dealing with mental health. So health. And because sometimes I've heard individuals, as I've counseled them as a pastor, Bishop, I don't like taking my medicine because it makes me drowsy. It kind of puts me in a lethargic state. So they don't want to take the medicine, and they absolutely need to take the medicine. And when you are being self-medicated or involved in self-medication, a lot of times they refuse to take the medicine. And of course, it's never a good result or end result in terms of their interactions with their family sometimes, the community, or even on their jobs.
Well, when you mentioned self-medication, self-medication comes in several forms. There's caffeine, nicotine, alcohol, cocaine, marijuana, heroin. All of those affect our brain in addition to prescription medications. Now, when we self-medicate, there's also non-medicinal ways to self-medicate, and those are therapeutic as well. So I'm not saying that those cocaine, heroin are therapeutic. I'm saying that there are ways to adjust your brain chemistry that can be therapeutic. Going to church, becoming involved in recreational activities, being around people, all of those have a therapeutic power on the brain. And so the more we educate people about how our brain works, what affects how we feel is really about our brain chemistry. And so when a person's taking medication, that's what we're affecting as well. Some medications do cause drowsiness. Yes, they do. And so staying in touch with the physician who's prescribing can reduce the dose so they don't have so many side effects.
And, you know, I think that's a great thing that you brought that point to our listeners, that sometimes we think therapy always has to be a prescription from a doctor. But I like what I hear you saying, you know, church, religious services and other kinds of self-help opportunities and resources that might be out there. It's good to know that there are non-prescribed medical treatments or therapy that individuals can engage themselves in, because sometimes, you know, cost becomes a factor. You know, well, I can't afford medicine. I can't afford this prescription. I'm low income or whatever, economically challenged. So it's good to know that we can see therapy in a much broader perspective than prescribed medicines.
Absolutely. The community interactions, people and relationships, they charge so much to the biochemistry of the brain that, you know, just because most people don't understand the biochemistry of the brain, you do understand, everybody understands when they hear something that they enjoy, a song, a sermon, or see something that they enjoy, a loved one, feel something that they enjoy or that they don't enjoy, they understand that that feeling, that sight, that that causes a change in their brain. Because again, your brain controls emotion and behavior. So just like those interactions with people are controlling your brain, medications can cause those same brain chemical changes.
Absolutely. So, and great point. Yeah. I want to remind our listeners that are just tuning in, you're listening to an hour of empowerment. I am your host, Charles Haywood Ellis III. We're talking about the effects of mental health on our children. Is this the new neglected disease? And on the line with us is Dr. Carolyn King, who is a doctor of psychiatry, and she practices at the Pine Rest Christian Mental Health Service, and she deals with children and adolescents. That is her expertise, but she also addresses adult issues as well. Dr. King, let's shift gears here, and let's move toward the effects of mental health on our children. Would you say that individuals that are being medicated, let's talk about therapy, medicated therapy or prescribed medication therapy. Would you say, let's say that a woman is pregnant or with child, and now she is on variations of medicines because of mental health. Does that affect that child, or are these prescribed medicines not threatening to that unborn fetus?
Well, that's actually a huge fallacy. What happens is, as a physician, we know what medications are safe during pregnancy and which medications are not safe during pregnancy. And what we very carefully weigh is the risk versus benefit of providing medication during pregnancy, during breastfeeding and the aftercare time of a parent. So we look at if a person were coming in and pregnant and suicidal, for example, because that's a huge mental health concern, is suicide and homicide. Would you want them to stay suicidal or homicidal versus would you want to put them on a medication that can work as an antidepressant, work as an antipsychotic so that they will not want to kill themselves or someone else? And so if they're going to be a little sleepy from that medication, which is worse, suicide, homicide, or a little bit of sedation?
Well, let me ask you this. When it comes to the endangerment of our children and the effects that mental illness or mental health have on that, what would you say some of the fallout of that? Would you talk about single parent homes or where there's a female and a male in the home? And I guess the question that I'm asking is specifically, in your experience over the years, what have you seen the most of, the neglect of a parent or the abuse of a parent? I guess both of them would be abuse, but, you know, I'm talking about physical abuse or neglect.
So let me get the question right. You're asking if what we're seeing the most in terms of child endangerment,
yes,
is neglect or abuse.
Physical abuse. That is
physical
correct.
Physical abuse or neglect.
Yeah, in your experience. In your experience, what has been the preponderance of cases that have come in? Is it that children are being neglected, or children are being physically abused?
That is a very, very good question, and the question brings up: is it the intention of the parent to abuse or neglect. And so when we look at what we're actually seeing as psychiatrists, we see both. We see neglect and abuse, and it's hard to say which is more, because neglect, as you were alluding to, is a form of abuse. And so we look at all of these as abuse. And that's when Child Protective Services is sometimes called to get involved to help. And the help is, again, back to education. Because, you know, when I was a kid, spankings were the way that children were disciplined. Now, if the spanking left marks, bruises, broken bones, at that point when you get to broken bones, obviously that's abuse. When the child is so endangered that they're not being fed, that they're being locked away because of behavioral problems for days and days on end, that's abuse. So how we prevent this is education and outreach to the community. When we see someone, a child coming in with bruises, bumps, and they're not, and the kid can't, those can't be explained, we want to get help. If we see a parent who's overwhelmed, they're complaining that their resources are lacking, they can't feed their kids, or they're looking stressed out with their kids, or they're, you know, tugging on them a little bit too rough, and they look like they need help. It's our responsibility as a community to reach out to help that person so that the danger doesn't come to the child.
We've got a couple minutes before our break. Let me just ask you a very simple question, and maybe you can give us a short answer. Is it your experience, or do you find yourselves engaging parent or parents and children together in therapy, or is it more one-sided either way?
Oh, you always want to take the whole family into the equation. And if you can, parents, aunts, uncles, teachers, whomever there is in the community to help.
I certainly appreciate that. Listen, we're going to break and we're going to pay some bills and we're going to come back on the other side. Again, you are listening to An Hour of Empowerment. I am your host, Charles Haywood Ellis III. Again, we invite you and we encourage you to reach out to us. You might have questions for our guests. You can do that by reaching out to Durrani. He's on our social media. And you can hit him on Twitter at Bishop, C-H-E, the number 3, at Bishop, C-H-E, the number 3, or you can reach out on Facebook, facebook.com/Bishop Charles H. Ellis, or you can reach us on our website, charleshellisministries.org. Again, we're talking about the effects of mental health on our children. Is this the new neglected disease? We'll be back in just a few minutes.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Grace and peace, my brothers and sisters. I'm Bishop Charles H. Ellis III, extending a special invitation to all senior pastors to join our exciting and expanding fellowship, Agape. This pastoral fellowship will provide a spiritual covering for you and connect you to the powerful anointing that God has placed upon our life. There are no yearly dues or fees aside from one initiation fee of $200. Remember that Agape is available to all senior pastors regardless of denomination or reformation. Therefore, won't you begin this brand new year by aligning and enhancing your spiritual endeavors with Agape, a graceful association of pastors ecumenically, and I hope to hear from you real soon.
For information, visit theagape.net. That's theagape.net. Or call us at 313-543-6069. That's 313-543-6069. They are classics from Charles Haywood Ellis III. Illustrated sermons, that is, on-stage sermon dramas that bring the Bible to life before your eyes. Like the Whip, Hammer, and Cross.
Judge him, Pilate! Judge him! Crucify him! And with his stripes, we are healed!
And the Horrifying, To Hell and Back.
No!
thousands worldwide have been touched, even transformed, by these amazing stage productions. Get the DVDs at charleshellisministries.org. And don't miss his hot-selling books, Wisdom for Life's Journey, and Things My Father Used to Say, little treasure troves of wisdom and eye-opening insights that will take you to a new level of success. This and so much more is available at charleshellisministries.org.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is an hour of empowerment. I am your host, Charles Haywood Ellis III. You can reach out to us on Twitter at @BishopCHE3 or Facebook.com/BishopCharlesHEllis, or you can hit us up on our website at CharlesHEllisMinistries.org. We've been talking today about the effects of mental health on our children. Is this the new neglected disease? We still got on the line Dr. Carolyn King from the Pine Rest Christian Mental Health Services. She is a psychiatrist for children and adolescents, and she's been sharing with us some very powerful and insightful information that will help all of us to try to do what we can to add our little two cents in to try to lessen the negative effects of mental health on our children and our society as a whole. Dr. King, you're still on the line?
I am.
Yes. There's been a national story that was local to us here in the Detroit community about this mother who had four children. The bailiffs from the court were coming to evict her. They found a freezer in this very small house, and they were going to store some of the things that they were packing to take out of the house in the eviction process. They opened up the freezer, and they found two children in the freezer, dead. Now we've learned that these children may have been dead for maybe 2 years. One was nine or 11. The other one was 12 to 14 years old, depending upon when they expired. Of course, it's been the big buzz here in the Detroit area and even on the national news circuit. And we have just hosted that funeral on today, maybe just an hour ago. I performed the eulogy for these two children. And it's easy to point a finger at the person that you see on the media, the mother who has been arrested and charged with this horrific circumstance and horrific crime. But there are three fingers pointing back at us. And my question is, what are some of the things that we can do to see ourselves as opposed to, we've always heard that it takes a village to raise a child. And the title of my eulogy today was, Where Was the Village? Where was I as a community leader, as a pastor? Where was Child Protective Services? Where was the school district? Because she was homeschooling these children, so maybe nobody was looking for them for 2 years. Where were the fathers? Where were the extended family, the grandparents? Where's the mental health agencies? Where was everybody when these children were suffering this horrific, horrific, horrific occurrence? Can you speak as to some of the things that we can do to engage ourselves to lessen the negative effects of mental health?
That's a great question. And that is the question. Where was everybody when these atrocities were happening in our community? I'm originally from Detroit, and one of the big things that happens is people say snitches get stitches. And that has kept people very silent in their silos, minding their own business. But that really is not working very well for us these days to say that. And part of it is the fear that, we will criminalize someone and then they will be abused even worse in the criminal system. We want to look at our intention. And so looking at the community's intention to help someone and looking at being very honest when you go to someone who you see is struggling, if the school goes in to check on the children, where are the children? where when the fathers ask to see the children, the grandparents ask to see the children, then knocking on the door, where are the children? And being very diligent about going and helping a person get help. When the mother says to you, and she's looking like she's not healthy, saying, are you okay? How can I help? If your suspicion is that she's so unhealthy she needs to get help right now, you call emergency services, just as you would for a heart attack, a stroke. You can call an EMS. You can call the police and get a person picked up and petition them to be evaluated psychiatrically. A lot of people don't know that.
What I hear you saying is that that's a 911 call, and I'm not sure that we view that as a 911 call because, again, snitches get stitches. I've certainly heard that. At one point, I believe Detroit was probably 78% African American, so it was so we are absolutely an urban community, and I've used the phraseology that we have turned the neighborhood into the hood. In other words, we have taken neighbors out of the hood. So we are just people who live next door to each other or people who live up the street from one another. And we have become those three monkeys, see no evil, hear no evil, speak of no evil. And it really has not worked well for us. And I believe that the death of these two children, Stoney Ann Blair and Stephen Gage Berry, is a wake-up call for all of us. And I believe that this alarm is not just ringing in Detroit. It's not just ringing in Southeast Michigan, but I believe it's making its way up to the capital of Lansing and the legislature and the Board of Education for the state of Michigan. Everybody's going to be looking at themselves, hopefully, and finding some resolve as to things that we could do to make sure that no child ever suffers this ever again, because there ought to be a variation of safety nets that would catch something like this, especially if these children have been deceased for over 2 years and you have two children still living in the house. So the stories that we're hearing are probably going to be accurate, because you have an older child who is 17 years old, and she is telling the stories, and certainly she is old enough and able to differentiate fact from fiction, and she's sharing the accounts of how they died, and the mother allegedly has confessed to these horrific crimes. But I don't think the see no evil, hear no evil, speak of no evil has served us well. I believe that we have to put the neighbor back into the hood. We have to be our brothers and our sisters' keepers. In your sharing with individuals and in your experience of meeting with families, do you find yourself engaging, and I think I heard you say engaging even a broader community beyond the family, into the school system and into churches and others? Tell me about how you engage all of those into helping families move in a healthier direction.
Well, you know, one of the things that we often say, we'll often ask, are you a member of a church? Okay. I'm in West Michigan, and it's a very big church community, and we'll ask people, are you going to church? And the churches can be a huge first point of contact to get help. This depends if the clergy or the congregation is willing to walk with the person to get help. Again, not pointing the finger at them and saying, hey, they need help, and whispering behind someone's back, but going to that person directly and saying, hey, is everything okay? How can I help you? I noticed that it seems to be that you're having a hard time with the kid. And then taking them to get the help. And if the person is rejecting the help or you feel they're a danger to someone else, calling 911. Our neglect of taking this step is abusive. I'm going to say that again. Our neglect of taking the step to get other people help is abuse to our community. We're being neglected.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And again, that's why I made the statement today during my eulogy, you know, where was the village, and included myself in the village. Even those individuals that came maybe just to be spectators, you know, the funeral of those two children is going to be the day. I'm going over to Greater Grace, and I want to see what's going on. And I told them, you might be here as a spectator, you know, not here to comfort anybody. But, you know, you need to point a finger at yourself. You know, if you're here at a funeral, then how can you be a little proactive, you know, touching some child somewhere, or adding your resources and rolling up your sleeve, and again, not whispering, talking about who needs help, but finding a way to put some skin in the game and to offer some help yourself. I think that was a great analogy that you made there, because all of us ought to be able to roll up our sleeves a little bit. You know, I always say writing a check is one form of help. And yes, we need money, we need finances to get things done in this world, but rolling up your sleeve is a level of engagement on a whole nother sphere. And I think that we need more people, not just to write checks, but to roll up their sleeves and to get involved. Listen, Dr. King, I want to appreciate you for joining in with us on today. You've been listening to An Hour of Empowerment, and I am thankful for all of you who have tuned in on today. We've been talking about the effects of mental health on our children. Is this the new neglected disease? Again, our guest has been Dr. Carolyn King from Pine Rest Christian Mental Health Services up in the Grand Rapids area, and she is a psychiatrist of children and adolescents. Thank you, Dr. King, for joining in, and I appreciate all the comments that you made, and we certainly hope that our viewers were benefited by it. God bless you, and have a great day.
Thank you, Bishop Ellis.
I want to shift gears now. We've got our second guest on the line, Dr. Jeanette Sheed. Dr. Jeanette Sheed is on the line today. She is a board-certified general and child psychiatrist who works with children and adults in multiple settings, community-based, residential, and inpatient. She has a long-standing interest in mental health in the context of family and community violence. I want to welcome to our show on today, An Hour of Empowerment, Dr. Jeanette Sheed. Welcome to the show on today.
Thank you, Bishop Ellis. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it's a pleasure having you. I want to remind those of you that are tuned in late, you're listening to An Hour of Empowerment. I'm your host, Charles Haywood Ellis III. You can reach us on Twitter at Bishop CHE, the number 3, or Facebook at facebook.com/Bishop Charles H. Ellis, or you can reach out to us on our website, charleshellisministries.org. Dr. Sheed, I want to jump right into this topic. The effects of mental health on our children, is this the new neglected disease? In your years of expertise, what are the telltale signs that a child may be in danger due to a parent suffering from mental health issues? Can you give us some examples?
Sure. It's rather a complicated question because different kinds of mental illnesses present differently. So let me just give a couple of examples. For example, mental illness, a specific kind of mental illness, say depression, can really rob individuals of motivation and energy, their normal sleep and appetite. And so when these problems get to be clinically significant, they can really interfere in most spheres of day-to-day functioning. And that would theoretically include some challenges in terms of providing good care and support and supervision and nurturing of children. Other issues, for example, other kinds of mental illnesses like bipolar disorder can also create difficulties because periods of elevated mood that go along with that disorder can result in things like poor judgment, engaging in activities that are kind of risky or unsafe, and theoretically that could also put a child at risk. But it's difficult to answer in outside of looking at a particular case, because everybody's response to mental health problems is in some respects unique.
Well, let me jump in here and then ask you this question, or make a statement and let you respond to it, because One of the first things, and we're talking about this case particular here in Michigan, and I don't know whether you saw it on the national news, where the mother of four allegedly killed two of her children and stuffed them in a freezer in the house, and they've been there for 2 years. One of the first things that this mother said once she was arrested and the children were discovered, the bailiffs were coming from the court to evict her and the children from the home. And they saw this freezer, and they was going to use it to store some of the things that they were taking out of the house. And when they opened the freezer, lo and behold, there are two bodies in this freezer, two children, one 11 and one 14 years old, a boy and a girl. And, of course, now it sets off in motion. Where's the parent of this home? And they find her, arrest her. The first thing she said that made the news, and she was not being silent, she was talking. She said, I don't want people to think I'm a bad person. And when she made that statement, everybody had different kinds of remarks or responses to that statement. And if you can just weigh in here quickly, people can be mean and not have mental health issues. People can have mental health issues and be very kind. People can have mental health issues and be very mean. So not everybody that is mean, and if we can use the word trifling, not everybody that is mean and trifling is suffering from mental health. Is that correct?
Well, yes, that's absolutely true. And this is where certainly I wouldn't be in any kind of a position to speak to any of the specifics of this case.
Sure, sure.
I mean, certainly it's a very sad set of events that I know is very complicated. I do think that certainly people can have all sorts of characteristics or behaviors that are not necessarily connected in any way to having a mental illness. And this is partly why, under any kind of circumstances, having a thorough and very careful assessment is just critical. So I think that aside from any specific statements on that case, I certainly think there's a couple of things. One is that it's certainly possible to demonstrate real problem behaviors and not have them connected to a mental illness. It is also possible, and I think in some respects this can be relatively common, that individuals can struggle with mental illness for some time, and because of the stigma connected to having emotional and behavioral problems, that they may not seek the kind of help that they need, and they may suffer for a long time. And in fact, problems that start out relatively minor can become more serious over time without that recognition, assessment, and treatment.
No, I appreciate those statements. And, you know, I'm just wondering if a child has a mean parent, and the parent is just not so nice, and they get talked to in very harsh ways, or they get handled a little roughly, that's what that child has come accustomed to, because maybe that's all that the parent has shown them. You know, when that child goes to somebody, their teacher, whatever, and makes those statements, you know, does it cause maybe somebody to overreact, how have you seen that factor in when those kind of situations have presented themselves?
Well, I certainly think that within the realm of sort of, what you bring up is a complicated issue. One is that we certainly, as a culture and a society generally, and also in the state of Michigan, take very seriously the risk associated with mistreatment of children, whether it can be from verbal mistreatment, physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, any of those possibilities. And so I think that as a culture, we have sort of recognized the importance of identifying and then investigating at any point that there's a concern that a child is being maltreated. And so I think that this is where a teacher, as a person who under the law is a mandated reporter, their job would be, if they hear a child making a statement that raises the suspicion that behavior is abusive, their job is to report it. It then becomes the job of protective services to proceed with an investigation, and that would certainly take into account all of the available information that that investigator could bring to bear, including talking with the child, talking with the parent, and trying to address and understand all of the different factors that may lead to that parental behavior. It may be that even though a parent's behavior would not fall within the category of what we think of as substantiated abuse or neglect, that it may also even be an opportunity through that investigation to help get that parent and child connected with services that would help maybe modify that parent's behavior if that's something that they were interested in. So even when information comes to the attention of a mandated reporter like a teacher or a doctor, it doesn't necessarily mean that the only choices are that abuse has occurred or it hasn't. There's also opportunities to really determine whether or not that family has needs that the broader community can address.
Thank you so kindly. I'm sure that'll benefit our listeners. Listen, we've got to take a break, got to pay some bills, and we're going to come back on the other side. You're listening to An Hour of Empowerment with your host, Charles Haywood Ellis III. Our special guest on today is Dr. Jeanette Scheid, and she has been blessing us with some very insightful information regarding the effects of mental health on our children. Is this the new neglected disease? We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
They are classics from Charles Haywood Ellis III. Illustrated sermons, that is, on-stage sermon dramas that bring the Bible to life before your eyes. Like the Whip, Hammer, and Cross.
Judge him, Pilate! Judge him! Crucify him! And with his stripes, we are healed!
And the Horrifying, To Hell and Back. Thousands worldwide have been touched, even transformed, by these amazing stage productions. Get the DVDs at charleshellisministries.org. And don't miss his hot-selling books, Wisdom for Life's Journey, and Things My Father Used to Say. Little treasure troves of wisdom and eye-opening insights that will take you to a new level of success. This and so much more is available at charleshellisministries.org.
This year, I'm getting my cut, get my healing cut, get my joy cut, get my happiness cut. Shout yeah!
And you can get the enlightenment and uplift you need from the Amazing Grace Telecast, the broadcast outreach of Greater Grace Temple in Detroit, with Senior Pastor Bishop Charles H. Ellis III. Join us daily, Saturday through Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, on the Word Network.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
Welcome back to our show on today. You are tuned in to An Hour of Empowerment. I am your host, Charles Haywood Ellis III. We've been talking today about the effects of mental health on our children. Is this the new neglected disease? If you want to reach out to us, or if you have any questions or comments for any of our guests that have been on, Dr. Carolyn King was on earlier today, and our guest right now is Dr. Jeanette Scheid. And if you have questions or comments for them, you can reach out to us at Bishop CHE3. That is our Twitter address. Again, at Bishop CHE, the number 3. Or you can hit us up on Facebook.com/Bishop Charles H. Ellis. Or you can reach out to us on our website, charleshellisministries.org. The effects of mental health on our children. Is this the new neglected disease? Again, Dr. Jeanette Scheid, are you still on the line?
You betcha.
Let me ask you, I was talking to Dr. Carolyn King earlier during the show, and we were talking about in this day and time, nobody wants to put their nose in anybody's business, and you have eight people on an elevator, and nobody will say anything to anybody. Not good morning, not how you're doing, not is everybody all right. We have really become people who are on islands, even though we're right next to each other. We've taken a neighbor out of the hood, so now the neighborhood has become the hood. We don't want to see any evil, hear any evil. We don't want to speak of any evil. Let me ask you this. How can we, as good families, members, and good neighbors, and just good people in the community, when we see signs of child endangerment, let me ask the first question is, how do we recognize these signs? Suppose you have shy children, they're introverts, they don't talk, they don't speak of things, but something in your gut says, you know, something is going on here. How can we get engaged or get involved without maybe crossing the line?
Okay. Well, I think that there's a couple of possibilities. I think in the broader sense, I certainly appreciate, you know, Dr. King's and your earlier conversation about our culture these days and where everybody is so, again, kind of isolated. I would add to that, if you didn't already touch on it, that I think that there remains a fairly high degree of stigma around mental health problems, substance use problems, and the like. And I think that that adds an additional barrier to people feeling comfortable raising those issues with children or with their parents who may truly be suffering with some of these difficulties. So it seems to me like on one level, one thing that individuals in their community can advocate for is at the natural gathering places, such as even grocery stores, or if they're, you know, places of worship, schools, doctor's offices, to ask those places if they can just put information up. Years ago, I can remember when there was this, when there was a campaign around safe places for children to go if they were in trouble. And I think revisiting some of those ideas so that parents and children recognize that there are places that they can go to tell folks when they're really struggling, I think is a very good way to do it. And this is particularly true, I think, within sort of the primary doctor community. So family practice doctors, pediatricians, those should be natural places where folks can raise difficulties that they're having. I guess in terms of things to watch for, I guess I would say that if in your community, if you know there's some children in their community, and especially if there's a change in their behavior, if they seem more withdrawn or more distressed than is normal for them, that might be an opportunity just to sort of check in and say, hey, it seems like you're quieter lately than normal. You know, how are things going? I also, you know, I think that if there are things that are more obvious signs of distress in a child and a family, the other thing is maybe for everybody to reframe the debate so that we're not talking about pointing fingers and we're not talking about, in some respects, accusing anybody of anything, but it's more this notion of we want everybody to be as happy and healthy and connected to their community as possible. And so if there's anything getting in the way of that, it's a helpful, you know, it's an opportunity to help people rather than to sort of point fingers. And those may be some things that folks could do to sort of get these problems recognized sooner when they're occurring.
Let me just jump in here and say that I've served on some committees and panels dealing with mental health. And I guess some of the concerns that I had that were being raised from individuals that were much more familiar with it than I was that sometimes government agencies, they don't view, seemingly by their funding, they don't view mental health as other diseases like cancer or and there is, I think I heard you use the word stigma, and there is absolutely a negative stigma that goes along with a mental illness and mental health. As we see now, breast cancer and various cancers, we see 5K walks and 3K walks, and we see thousands of people and hundreds of thousands of people engaging, and they and the NFL and basketball, the NBA, they put on the blue, the pink shoes and the pink gloves, and they have that representation, and even men want to be associated, you know, in caring about breast cancer, but when it comes to mental health, I think that I've come to learn through various panels and through various discussions that it is a disease. It's just like other diseases, but it sometimes is not viewed that way and carries a stigma with it. And maybe sometimes we don't see government agencies providing funding that they do for those other diseases. Can you weigh in on it being a disease just as some of the others that we see, kidney disease, cancer, diabetes, and other things?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that the information from research is getting stronger and stronger and stronger to indicate that there is that individuals with mental illness come by those vulnerabilities through problems with their genetic makeup. So it's heritable, like other diseases are. It is, you know, mental illnesses have a specific set of symptoms that are usually associated with them that, again, is very similar to the kind of symptom clusters that you get if you're diagnosing a heart attack or diabetes or a seizure disorder. And interestingly enough, I think that mental health problems are often part of, are often characterized by emotional and behavioral problems. But if you think about the kinds of diseases that we typically think of as being physical illnesses, most of them are also affected in some way by individuals' behavior choices. So it's very important, say, for a person with diabetes to take good care of their health and to make good choices. And, you know, as human beings, we struggle with that. So I absolutely think that mental illness really falls squarely within medicine, as a set of illnesses that need to be addressed, certainly in their own right, and treated appropriately, but not sort of shunted to a different area of medicine and medical care. And I think there's actually increasing recognition of this with the efforts to work on integrating mental health care into the primary care setting so that more people are aware of mental health issues and can access care through that realm, at least certainly in the present, why there's still some degree of stigma. I also want to make folks aware, if they're not, of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which is a grassroots organization that is for people with mental illness and their families. There are chapters. This is a national organization, but there's a Michigan chapter, and there are chapters in most communities across the state. And in fact, NAMI usually does a walk to raise awareness of mental illness every year. They have a website that has a lot of information and support for individuals with mental illness and their families, and this, you can Google it. So.
Well, we've got a couple more minutes, and I just want to throw this out to you and just hear you respond to it before we close out on today. And we thank you for your time, and you've been very, very insightful to myself and to our listeners, I'm certain. I would hope that when we see these kinds of circumstances and horrific incidents as today, we certainly don't ever want to repeat it ever again. My concern is that we help on both sides. If we see child abuse as a result of mental health, well, we know that the first thing we want to do is get the child out of that danger, and we absolutely ought to do that. But then if we're not really going to put the resources in place to help that parent, then we're really saying that there's not going to be any reconciliation, because we can't be schizophrenic and take a child out and put a child back when we have not done anything to make that environment better and conducive? I just want you to weigh in on that before we leave.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think it's absolutely true that under the circumstances when there are concerns about a child's safety for whatever reason, this includes mental health problems in the parent, that under federal law and under federal policy through the Department of Health and Human Services and replicated kind of in Michigan-based policy and procedure in our Department of Health and Human Services, is clearly a value towards looking at that child and that family as a unit and identifying the strengths and the needs of the child, the strengths of the needs of the parent, and in the context of the broader supports, maybe of broader family relationships that are present in that situation, and really identifying all of the different things that would allow that that family to be reunified, if at all possible, the services that a parent would need to successfully navigate their mental health difficulties, regardless of what it is, and then to also work towards rebuilding the parent-child relationship, again, whenever possible, so that that family can sort of knit themselves back together and become more independent and thriving.
Thank you so
very. Absolutely, that's what we do.
Thank you so very kindly, and we are up against our break. You have been a blessing to us on today, Dr. Jeanette Scheid. Our other guest was Dr. Carolyn King. We have been talking about the effects of mental health on our children. Is this the new neglected disease? You've been listening to an hour of empowerment with your host, Charles Haywood Ellis III. Thank you, Dr. Scheid, for chiming in on today, and you have been most beneficial to our listeners.
It's been a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're welcome. I want to thank all of our listeners who have tuned in today. Thank you for tuning in on today. And remember, if you're not a part of the solution, you are a part of the problem. Look in the mirror and begin with yourself. It all begins with you. Have a blessed day.